Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming to learn more about oracles and how they fit into smart contracts and Ethereum's overall future. So I think the first useful thing is for us to get some shared context and to look at the security problem that we're trying to solve, and then look at the different ways in which that security problem can be solved effectively. So the nature of the problem is that smart contracts on great networks like Ethereum can't connect with external data. This is based on how they reach consensus about transactions, how they verify the data in blocks, and it isn't something that's likely to change. It's an inherent problem of all decentralized infrastructure that seeks to package transactions into blocks, because the miner set that you have doing that, you don't want a specific miner responsible. You don't want him having control over the ability to, you know, make your contract trigger from data or not trigger. And you also can't have the entire miner set exposed to various arbitrary APIs. So this is known as the Oracle problem, and it's the inability of layer one systems to interact with external data. Now, the significance of this is rather large. The significance of this is why we are currently mainly defined as an industry by tokens. And we're defined as an industry by tokens because that's effectively what base layer one systems can do, because they have it inherently built in to incentivize mining and therefore allow their, you know, their basic existence. Now, the reality is that if you look at the rest of the world and you look at all the digital agreements powering financial products in various centralized forms, the insurance industry, the global trade finance industry, all of these industries use some form of digital agreement, and all of those forms of digital agreement require inputs. Inputs about what happened relative to the agreement's terms. So generally speaking, we call these events, and the ability for a contract to know about an event is a necessary condition for it to be written about that event. So essentially, the significance of the limitation is without the ability to interact with events, smart contracts would stay related to tokens, which is only a small percentage of what our technology could be about. So our industry could be about financial products, insurance, global trade, if we're able to solve this problem. So historically, how our industry has actually evolved is it's gone from a smaller set of capabilities for developers to a larger set of capabilities. The first large shift in capabilities was from Bitcoin multi-signature as the only capability that anybody could build around in around, you know, 2011, 12. And then in about 14, you had the first app coins, as they were called. These were protocol smart contracts where you had to bake a smart contract into each protocol. Then the protocol smart contracts got switched over to scriptable contracts. And scriptable contracts is what Ethereum deserves the vast majority of the credit for. They've done a fantastic job of taking our space from these protocol contracts that took months to get launched to scriptable contracts, which took days to launch. And because they took days to launch, we now have all these people launching massive high-value systems based on this capability. And as you can see, a lot of those systems are pretty much exclusively focused on tokens, because at the moment, that's what scriptable capabilities allow. What we think is that scriptable contracts together with external events is how our space moves into this entirely new stage of usefulness for developers, for users, you know, how we redefine our space to be about tokens and all the other types of digital agreements that underpin, you know, very important global industries. Generally speaking, this is the problem that we work on. We focus on creating secure blockchain middleware. That product is called Chainlink, and it basically focuses on enabling the ability to get data into networks like Ethereum, get networks like Ethereum to pay in other systems and interact with other environments, as well as get them to do cross-chain things. We're already live on mainnet. It's all working, and the things that I'm going to be showing to you are live and working and usable by you as developers. So generally speaking, I think there's kind of two key points in this talk. One key point is, how do you define the security of an oracle so that you can rely on it to trigger your contract? So that's a very important question. And then the second question is, once you rely on the security of an oracle, what can an oracle really do for you, right? Like, okay, I've arrived at a place where I can assess and feel comfortable about the security of this Oracle mechanism, which effectively makes up the second half of my contract. Because if my contract is about an event, I have a piece of it about on-chain state and I have a piece of it about the event. And both the on-chain state and the off-chain event needs to be properly guaranteed from a technical point of view in order for the smart contract to retain its unique property of reliability. So these are kind of the points I'm going to be speaking about and elaborating on what it is that what makes a secure Oracle and what a secure Oracle can do to expand what developers in our space could build to create all these other various types of usefulness and valuable contracts. Generally speaking, our approach to all of this is the ability to provide decentralization for the Oracle mechanism by having multiple independent node operators validate the accuracy of Oracle reports. We do this through something called binding service agreements. Binding service agreements make an Oracle commit to delivering a certain quality of data or computation or a payments outcome, and that commitment is both technically and cryptographically guaranteed and crypto-economically guaranteed through things like staking. The ability for all the binding service agreements that an Oracle generates to be aggregated into a picture of that Oracle's overall reliability. The application of something called defense in depth, where we layer on multiple security approaches on top of decentralization, such as trusted execution environments and zero knowledge proofs. And the fact that we do this with a large open source community made up of some of the best academic researchers, some of the best security auditors, and a large and growing group of developers that are excited about enabling this world of smart contracts beyond tokenization. So it's usually useful to look at the problem we're solving. The specific problem we're solving is the problem of centralization and the capacity for an Oracle to fail, because it's been made unreliable by being attacked as a single point of failure. Generally speaking, the way to approach this is through decentralization. Just like the contract is secure through multiple node operators validating the inputs and validating the transactions that the block in the contract is made up of, we have multiple oracles validating that an input is indeed correctly validated and secure and reliable enough to trigger large amounts of value. This is partly guaranteed by service agreements. Service agreements are not legal documents. They are on-chain commitments that are cryptographically and technically enforced to guarantee that an Oracle does deliver data, and that if an Oracle doesn't deliver data, there's immediate and inescapable penalties, both to their long-term usefulness for other users and immediate loss of stake and other negative factors. Generally speaking, we see a world where, just like you have right now extreme decentralization in Ethereum, you should be able to have whatever degree of decentralization you'd like to have from the Oracle mechanism. And also, that'll probably lead to decentralization at the data source level, such that, you know, the highest value, hundreds of millions of dollar contracts, you already see them thinking about all these things in more detail. And you see them wondering, why do I think an Oracle is secure? How do I know that this data source won't be compromised? How do I protect myself from a data source being compromised? How do I protect myself from an Oracle being compromised? These are the problems that our space is going to have an answer to if we wanted to move into this realm of events-driven contracts. So that's the very large focus that we have, is solving the problem of how do you reliably provide guarantees that your events-driven contract can have $1 billion put into it and can be considered reliable enough to move that $100 million dollars in a matter of seconds, which is the real, you know, promise and value of our space. So generally speaking, the way this looks in practice is, you know, service agreements are made up of something called jobs. Jobs are basically function as a service blocks of predefined computations that a node operator lists themselves as opting in to do. You interact with them as on a service agreement. They commit to do this computation for you, in this case, the retrieval of price. You select from a multitude of nodes. We have, I think, approaching 70 high-quality nodes now, and I think a quarter of them are security reviewed in a two-week process with a security interview at the end, both creating Sybil resistance and an overview of their security infrastructure, which we then present to users as well. And generally speaking, the goal is, what I'm showing you here has been achieved. If you want to compose a reliable Oracle network with multiple independent parties running that network and multiple independent data sources feeding your decentralized finance contract reliable data, this has now been achieved on mainnet. It's been live for a number of months now without any security issues. Likewise, if you wanted to compose something like a smart contract for crop insurance, the crop insurance would learn about weather, it would aggregate data about weather, and it would then arrive at a conclusion for that outcome. And then also through the set of oracles that we have, be able to execute payments. So it would be able to ingest inputs, put outputs, and these are the previous DeFi example and this example are what we're really trying to get the space to, so that just like you could write a token in a day, you should be able to compose a high quality externally connected contract in a day. Generally speaking, what all of this usage does, and this is one of the important nuances of how you would evaluate an oracle, is it generates a lot of data. It generates massive amounts of data, just like you have block explorers for Ethereum contracts. We have even more detailed block explorers for Chainlink Oracle reports that define exactly what somebody did, what they committed to do, and whether they met their previous commitment. You can find all this in a multitude of resources, and I'll show you how to do that at the end of the talk for a set of Oracle networks that we call reference data networks. So generally speaking, the part of the goal here is how do I, as a user, effectively assess a node operator that I can then compose into greater and greater networks, and such that if the value of my contract grows, I can compose greater and greater collections of node operators. We enable this by floating provable information about their infrastructure, how they've been able to successfully fulfill their commitments, and also what specific infrastructure they run on, and also the capabilities they can give you through that infrastructure. So that's the thing that we've actually been seeing quite a bit of. Since launching on mainnet, we've been seeing quite a lot of adoption and additional usage, not only in data delivery, but in the ability for a Chainlink to connect smart contracts to all the different function as a service systems, all the different computational environments other than blockchains, which gives smart contracts the capacity to securely use huge amounts of computing resources. This is, for example, a diagram we released in a post with Google describing how a theoretical architecture would look in the case of using Google Cloud's platform for one of their specific core services like BigQuery. And here at DEF CON, there's been released by one of our users, Foam, great group of folks, basically building an incentive service, a service to generate valuable location data using token incentives. And here's how that architecture looks. So just like we started out with data, and we've started to enable a lot of DeFi and a lot of simpler on-chain contracts with data, the next stage in all of this is actually expanding the definition of an oracle beyond just something that provides data, but something that actually provides access, secure and provably secure access, to all the different computational resources available outside of blockchains. This includes random number generators, it includes all the resources in cloud providers, all the great pre-made services and functions as a service that you would want to use, and the capacity to validate and prove that those computations were correctly executed on one service or even across different services. So I think the interesting thing that we've seen is the capacity to move beyond data and into data plus computation, such that Chainlink becomes an off-chain resource that developers can go to compose whatever interactions they need to compose around their contract in the world of all the already existing high quality off-chain computation that's out there. Another example of this is our recent announcement at the start of this conference about how Chainlink enables Ethereum contracts to use Intel's trusted computing framework. So Intel has spent a lot of time and effort and we've been working with them to generate a good trusted computing framework that implements trusted execution environments as something that can be used in layer two systems. And the capacity to use layer two systems that use trusted execution environments as an off-chain computational resource that provides highly reliable, highly scalable, private computations while keeping a contract on chain is right now, due to the current limitations of on-chain contracts, probably the way people are going to build high throughput, high value applications that still have access to public network value. Right. So on the one hand, we want applications that exist in large public networks like Ethereum that have access to that to the user set, to the network effect kind of value that network has accrued. But at the same time, we want a lot of functionality because we want to build more and more complex, more and more valuable and useful contracts. And the middle ground seems to be the capacity for a developer to use an off-chain computation environment to interact with all the different computations they need, and then to prove back on chain that those computations that they performed were properly performed, that the data was properly delivered for those computations, and that that computation can form a reliable part of that contract. Right? So that's kind of the expansion of what we're starting to define Chainlink as. What a lot of this leads to is it leads us to a world where across environments, we have Chainlink node operators that are servicing various different chains, and they're accruing usage. And that usage in various different environments is once again another source of proof. It's a source of proof that there's, you know, 5 DeFi applications, 2 insurance applications, you know, 5 gaming applications using this node operator. And this node operator is able to successfully deliver data and randomness and various types of data to these users, and that provides even greater surety. So as a system like ours gets used, you start to accrue a lot more data about each individual node operator, and that accrual of data provides even greater assurances. So there's kind of a network effect from usage that allows people to continually define greater degrees of their security and guarantees for users. Now, one of the things that we've been using, one of the Oracle networks that we've composed for the use of the ecosystem are these price reference data networks. Price reference data networks basically put data on chain. They put data on chain for use mainly by DeFi projects. And right now, price reference data networks, like the one I'm showing here, powers all of decentralized finance. Except if somebody made a centralized Oracle and they took a big risk on that. But you know, that's their decision, which I don't really advise. So these price reference data networks that we've already made right now have grown to be the largest, most secure, most Sybil resistant. We can definitively say that because we have the most node operators. For example, in this network with ETHUSD price, we have 17, and we're far ahead of schedule to reach the targeted 21. We have multiple high-quality data aggregator sources, so not original exchanges, but data aggregators that take on the burden of making sure the data is correct. And it's a Sybil-resistant network because we validated these node operators over the course of a 2-week process and a final security interview. And it's also security reviewed in many other forms, like the ways that I showed you. So even the node operators I showed you in the previous slide with all that detail are the ones that are powering a network like this. So these reference data networks are actually very important. As you can see, you can dig into them. We encourage you to go and look at them. You can once again see exactly what they're doing. And this level of clarity is supposed to provide users a guarantee that the reference data on this network is reliable enough to trigger their hundreds of millions of dollars in value, whereas any other type of reference data network or some centralized Oracle wouldn't have any of this information. You wouldn't have any guarantees that this Oracle is committed to or has successfully performed its obligations previously. We've had so much success so far doing this, and it's been done so securely over the past number of months that we're basically committing to expand the amount of reference data networks. These are the next 7 reference data networks that we're going to be launching: Bitcoin, DAI, USDC, 0x, REP, WBTC, and BAT prices. These prices and feeds were chosen based on the needs of our users and customers. They're meant to service systems like Compound, partially synthetics, partially other systems that are going to be building their contracts and securing their value using these reference data networks. These reference data networks are once again, they're provided free by us. If somebody wants to add security to them, we're going to be releasing information about how somebody could take a reference data network with, 5 or 7 oracles and how they can add more oracles to that reference data network in case they start using it and they want to add more security on top of the initial security we paid for. But we're very excited to be giving back to the community because the Ethereum community has done a huge amount for us. And we think that the capacity to have high quality data on chain and to make it extremely usable and reliable is one of the key things that will kickstart DeFi. And so right now we're committing to put these 7 networks out because we know they're going to successfully service existing users and customers. And beyond that, we plan to launch many more. In that vein, if you have a DeFi project, if you have a need for a reference data price on chain, we want to support you. And our goal as a company is actually to make our users succeed by giving them access to this reliable data. So our Chainlink is basically here to enable smart contract developers to build any kind of externally connected or next generation contract. And if that's what you're doing, we're very collaborative, very helpful people. We have a huge integration engineer and support engineering staff that is there to help you build these contracts. And likewise, even make a great reference data network, possibly even starting out for your use case, but then getting used by other DeFi projects as well. So thank you very much, and I'm looking forward to seeing you all at the conference. Thank you.